I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Welcome to Dynasty As They Want to Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series Dynasty, or as they say in Australia, Dynasty.
I mean, they say all kinds of things in Australia.
I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me, he's already spoken, but he's here, my co-host and husband, Kyler K. Jafari.
Yeah, that's right, I'm here, yes. It's... Kyler, hi.
It's been a while. Derek and Kyler are here to lull you into a
dynasty-infused fever dream that will send you into a fifth dimension.
Oh my god, I love that.
Yeah, and unfortunately that's all lies and bullshit, but you know, it's fun to think about and talk about as well. So here we are.
Well, there's been so many things going on in the dynasty world. Good, bad, ugly. Good, I guess we'll start with the 40th unofficial reunion that happened on Zoom recently. Not everybody was there, but my God, they got lots of people had their lock. I mean, it was all organized by Emma Sams. So it was kind of weird for me because, as you know, we're going through Dynasty. We've watched the first season. We've watched the second season. We're now wrapping up the third season. I don't know Emma Sams because Fallon is... Pamela Sue Mark.
Let's be real. Dynasty is about John Forsythe, Linda Evans, Joan Collins, and then you kind of pick your second string, which is, for me, it's Pamela Bellwood. She's technically the number one.
Yes,
for me,
we're very familiar here. We know you're a Claudia stan.
But you could go down the John James thing. You could pick or choose, you know, is it Al Corley, Jack Coleman? There's, you know, so there's that second string, and not because they are second string, but because that's the characters. And
yeah, they recast.
What they do.
This is what happens when a show runs for 9 years.
Exactly. And then you have like a thing where I don't love hate. I don't have like a big opinion.
There's room for everybody.
Exactly.
There's room for everybody.
You know, sometimes you want the fruit salad. Sometimes you just want the turkey dinner. You know, the buffet is open to everybody.
I want a sushi roll. Here's what I'll say. It was lovely to see everybody on the reunion. There was a lot of people. There was a lot going on. And I think, you know, this was an unofficial reunion organized by Emma Sams. It was very lovely. I'm glad she did it. The funds went to research for long COVID, which is very good. Golf claps. I just think the 40th anniversary of Dynasty deserves a bigger reunion. And now we know we need more time. We need more people. Joan kind of popped in. Linda popped in. That was nice. Heather Locklear was this like ray of sunshine. So that's the good news. We got this unofficial reunion. I think for the most part, everybody was really happy with it. The bad news is, update for hashtag justice for Dynasty. Dynasty is not on this Paramount Plus app.
Yeah.
And I'm beside myself. And frankly, this is why we haven't really recorded the podcast lately, because I was really...
It's a silent protest.
I was really putting all my faith in the fact that Paramount would include Dynasty. I mean, they've got Pete and all these old Nickelodeon shows on Paramount. They've got, you know, they don't have every season of The Real World.
Rugrats.
But they do. Rugrats is on there.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
They've got Rugrats.
You can watch all freaking goddamn seasons of Rugrats.
92 you know, seasons of
God
Rugrats.
God forbid you want to watch Dynasty.
And you can't
watch. This is what I'm coming to understand over the years. It's certainly relevant to enough people that they, you know, they've tried to reboot it.
Well, they're currently rebooting it.
We don't talk about that.
Mm-mm.
And... yeah, but it's like
for you new listeners, we do not talk about the reboot here. Move along.
Dynasty the Reboot is not something we ever discuss on this show, so we can talk about that later, you know. Never. Thank you.
Bye.
There's this weird limbo that Dynasty is in. You know, where they can have a reunion, but it's going to be Emma Sams and, you know. And
it was very well attended.
Finally, Pamela Bellwood signed on for it. And look, you know, I understand. You don't want to be like, this is the only thing that I ever did.
Here's the thing, though. They can win new audiences over with this show. It's as relevant today as it was back then.
I would argue it's actually more relevant
than the other crap that's on TV, for sure. I would agree with that, but I don't know if
the one takeaway I get when I see them talk about it right now, everybody acknowledges how artificial and over the top and how ridiculous it was, and they knew that even then.
Oh, yeah, they felt silly.
So I love that, because you know, you look back on the 80s, and I wasn't old enough to really know it, but
Brad.
I was there. I like that they even acknowledge that, no, this was a cartoon
mm-hmm.
for adults,
yeah.
essentially.
It was like a vaudevillian sort of
situation.
It was
so vaudeville, yeah.
But they still, and you see when they talk about it, they still have this je ne sais quoi. So I'm still standing for Dynasty. I'm still hoping that they can work out the contracts or whatever is holding them up from putting this fucking show on Paramount Plus.
Well, this is like how the, you know, there's only Real World seasons 1-4. And I don't want to go into a Real World thing, but anyway.
Yeah, this isn't a Real World
podcast.
There's
only the first four seasons on Paramount Plus.
I want to get to a reader letter. One of our listeners, Dave, I don't want to give his last name, wrote into us. He's supporting us on Patreon. Thank you, Dave. I wanted to read his letter. For once, I'm listening while not driving, so I thought I'd reach out on a couple of things. Well, Dave, we appreciate you finally stopping driving.
We're about to get red for Phil.
No. This is nice. I think he just wanted to tie up some loose ends on the three seasons that we've been recapping the show.
We've said more wrong things that are about to be called out.
Did you guys notice that the mansion set changes significantly between the second and third seasons? I think we've talked about it. I mean, certainly when they introduced these random ass new rooms like the solarium and, you know, the nursery was a big one.
You know, I have to say on that one, I feel like the set changed more from the first to the second season. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I need to, like, just go back to school. But yeah, I do agree that between the second and third seasons, I feel like more stuff was added. If stuff changed between the second and third season on the set.
Well, there's kind of the different placement of the breakfast room. The kitchen got a little bit of a tweak, but...
I don't know if it's famous, but I will say famously, many of the bedrooms and upstairs rooms were all interchangeable walls that just kind of got moved around and changed.
That's usually how it works.
Which, yes, I understand that's how that works.
Well, the bigger thing that I think we've been talking about a little bit more recently in the podcast is the exterior changes, you know, with the clock tower and the pool. And
again, that's not really exterior changes. Those are sort of, to me, additions.
Well, like, they just shot it at different houses.
Yeah, they shot a lot of it at different houses. The clock tower was clearly like, I don't know why Kathleen Beller gets a clock tower.
But in the world that they're building, you know, maybe the Carringtons have three different pools, you know?
I mean,
did you think of that?
What's weird to me?
Did you think of that, Dave?
Is that pool, that the one that we're talking about in the credits, it's consistently referred to as a lily pond.
Oh, no. The lily pond is different from the pools. I'm talking about like when Alexis and Claudia were like hanging out at the pool with the yellow furniture. Anyway.
Okay, we don't know what, or I don't know what we're talking about.
There's ponds, there's pools, there's a lot going on. All right, I will continue. Also, Dave says, I was a TV Guide junkie back in the day and a huge Dynasty fan. I don't recall them ever publishing the titles of the episodes. Now, famously, this is something that we keep bringing up on the podcast. And I don't know why.
We're such episode title scolds. And I think that this is proper. They probably didn't. But you know what's weird?
We're millennials.
I feel like in TV Guide, though, I know what a TV Guide looks like. I know how it feels. I could hold one in my hand right now.
What are you talking about? You keep saying that you don't know anybody who read TV Guide. And now Dave is attesting that he read TV Guide.
Well, I'm glad somebody's finally chiming in. I appreciate research from the field.
Yeah, we need an actual TV Guide subscriber.
I'm just saying, I recall they would always put the, you know, obviously the show, and sometimes they would put the title of the episode.
Okay,
not
well,
always.
You and Dave is going to have
now
beef.
Dynasty. So, I don't know if they did that for. And Cheers, I can guarantee you, they put the title.
Don't
of
bring
every episode
Cheers
for
into
Cheers.
This, okay? So Dave says, I was only ever aware of episode titles when I bought the DVDs. Okay, so that makes sense. Unlike a show like Knott's Landing, he's going to bring Knott's Landing into this.
No,
title at the opening credits. Okay, see, this is the differentiator right here. In my recollection, Dynasty never made these available. Keep up the great work, smiley face.
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct.
This is a testament to your point in that, you know, people did not know the episode titles of Dynasty.
I don't think people expected there to be a title either. I think it was just programming.
Well, I think after Dave's letter, we really need to make a concerted effort not to make a big damn deal about the titles of these episodes. Also, the titles are terrible. Tonight's episode is
That's why we talk about the titles, because they are terrible.
But tonight's episode is called The Dinner, right? There's not even a dinner that happens.
But which one? I've had so many dinners.
Also, my favorite episode of Dynasty so far in the first three seasons is called The Dinner Party, which happened in season one.
I mean, there's at least now three episodes that have the word dinner in the title.
So the episode titles are irrelevant. So can we please make a gentleman's agreement that we're not going to make a big damn deal about these episode titles anymore?
Yeah, so this is a good call out. We just need to quit kibitzing titles of the show.
Can you say thank you to Dave?
Thank you to Dave.
Thank you, Dave. And I guess that's a good segue into getting to this week's episode, The Dinner. Today's installment of Dynasty As They Want to Be is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our darlings a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast. That's NASTY, Nasty Podcast. There, you can browse their unrivaled selection of audio programs. Just go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast or text Nasty Podcast to 500-500 to get started today.
We get like some very indiscreet titles. Pamela Bellwood shows up in the intro titles.
Shocking revelation.
And I gotta say, I was like so excited. I felt like a schoolgirl. Like, and I still feel excited when I'm like, oh my God, Pamela Bellwood's back.
I thought that it would be a bigger deal that she was back. Instead, we just kind of get this weird visit from new Steven to the sanitarium that she's in, the new sanitarium that she's in. I mean, she looks fucking fantastic. She's coming in from a jog. She's got a great headpiece on. And there's a lot to unwrap because these characters haven't seen each other since really like the first season, right?
It's almost been a full season since, yeah, these characters have all been together.
And so much has happened because she was going through her mental health rehabilitation when she was staying in the Carrington mansion. Steven's died and come back to life. He's had a baby. He's gotten married. So they really needed more together than just like hanging out post jog in the lawn at the sanitarium.
Am I crazy or did she not even acknowledge? Maybe she didn't acknowledge that he looked.
Yeah, she said his eyes are the same. But yeah, I mean, she's acknowledged his physical differences more than any other character, I think. Maybe other than Mrs. Gunner.
But I feel like they're like soulmates in a friend way, you know. So I don't think she really cares that he looks different. It's more about these are two characters that are reunited. And this was always for me the heart and soul of Dynasty in the beginning.
Well, and Pamela Bellwood really does a lot of heavy lifting in this scene. She is emoting. She's really tapping into all of the Claudia Blaisdell-ness that we love. And she's going through what is driving these characters, and that is their parenthood. And that's this bond that I think that they have now, is that Stephen is a new dad, and, you know, she's still kind of obsessed with Lindsay, RIP.
Yeah, and, you know, she's kind of acknowledging that Stephen is going to do his own thing and he's got to have his own life. You know, not that she ever thought she was going to be a part of any of that, but it's very clear that there are two people that are going to have some kind of relationship going forward, and definitely did before, but it won't be, you know, based on that stereotypical tradition of, you know, man and woman and child.
Yeah, I mean, what I do like is that we learn that Crystal has actually been off screen going and visiting Claudia and kind of filling her in on what's going on in the world. And I like that for Crystal, because these women were not aligned at all.
Well, I've had company. Crystal especially. She's been up quite a few times. She's talked to me about you. Must be difficult for you. Trying to put your life, your new life, back together again.
Well, must not be very easy for you either. Everything you've been through.
The hell and the torment. Yes.
This really is Crystal's episode. This whole damn thing. It is the Crystal show.
Wait, are you sure about that? Tell me why.
Well, you know, we start with Crystal holding the baby, and I think in this episode,
but that's all Crystal does is hold babies. But she's a baby holder.
I think more
Crystal is a baby cradle.
But I think more in this episode than any other, she really confronts Blake on multiple levels, and I like that. I like that he's finally being challenged by this woman.
How does she confront him on multiple levels? Give me one level she confronts him on.
Okay, well, to start out with, she's like, you went to all this trouble to rescue your supposedly dead gay son in the Java Sea or wherever the fuck that he was. And now you're just throwing the relationship away. You went to all of this trouble, spent all of this fuel in the private jet to go back and forth to Singapore. And she's right. She's absolutely 100% right. He went to all this trouble, and like, him and Stephen are back to where they were. They're just avoiding each other and they hate each other. And now Stephen's working for Alexis.
Look, Crystal's gripe is my gripe. Why is Blake the center of everybody's goddamn attention? I don't understand. And that's probably
because he's a white man.
This show could
penis.
Be so much more interesting if it weren't for that. And that's not even for like, oh, because today, you know, women and other gendered people and all of that. No, it's not even that. It's just like, Blake's not that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of an asshole.
Kind of.
I understand why Crystal's kind of having a hem-haw about this. But anyway, sorry. So there's supposed to be some other reasons, like just not that one.
Oh, wait, that's not enough for you? Because you told me just give you one reason, and I gave you one reason.
Well, you said you had a few.
The other reason why it's Crystal's episode is that she goes to Alexis's office and calls her out. And, you know, Alexis is downward spiraling. This is not a good episode.
The writers just don't know what to do with her right now, but she's not downward spiraling. I don't buy that.
She bought a dress that was exactly the same as the one that she was wearing, along with replica panties and stockings, to stage that she's fucking Mark. This is the most desperate thing I've seen her do since she put that rifle in the air and made Crystal fall off the horse and miscarry.
That's a good example of something that we kind of just take for granted now, but like hello, this is actually kind of skullduggery. Like, this is ridiculous and it's melodramatic.
When she pulled that blue dress out of her purse at La Mirage in Mark's room, first of all, how did she even know he was going to be in the shower? I mean, it's the whole thing is like so convenient. And then she like types up that note, which I guess is like in today's standards, instead of typing that note to Fallon, which why would Mark type a note to Fallon? But anyway, Mark types a note to Fallon. This would be like, you know, like faking a text or like catfishing somebody.
Yeah.
Basically, Alexis catfished her daughter.
Yeah. You know, in some sense, we're not supposed to be surprised, but that's because she has become a legend. Like, okay, this is like Greek mythology. 10,000 years from now, when we are all gone, the mythology the dynasty has created, Alexis will be like this character. And this is one of those things.
I hope not, because this episode, she seems so petty. I mean, she has like this corporate takeover going on where she's got to figure out, you know, the evaluation of the shale oil extraction, which I cannot believe.
No, nobody
cares
about that.
Still talking about shale oil extraction. But she's, you know, during the day, she's talking to Blake about shale oil extraction. And then at night, she's putting fake panties in Mark's room to like get back at him for boning her daughter. This is like so beneath her. It's so petty. And that's why this is Crystal's episode.
I like the blue dress situation, because now I just want the Depeche Mode blue dress supercut with scenes from this episode.
It's not the Gap blue dress that Monica Lewinsky
wore. No, that's a different blue dress. See, so many blue dresses. What? I don't know. If I were a professor of semiotics, like, there's a blue dress lecture series that I need to put together for that. But anyway.
And then we have Crystal go into Alexis's office and confront her and tell her to stop trying to get Steven on one side and her on the other. And she's just so emotionally bereft that she can't handle it. And Crystal gets in that delicious jab about the Tusk desk.
I'm going to keep on interfering, Alexis, until Blake and his son are what they should be to one another. A father who loves and respects his son, and a son who loves and respects his father, despite you. Get out of my office before I have you thrown out. I love your desk. The Tusks, they're so you. Get out!
You know, we've been going several episodes with this new office, and nobody has made mention of the fact that Alexis's fucking executive desk is made of glass and Tusks.
So this is interesting, because you and I are now basically on, you know, Crystal's
Team Crystal
level, because we've always said snarky things about that desk. And it's interesting. So why would they give Crystal this point of view out of nowhere? Because she doesn't normally...
I don't know if she's been in that office yet.
She has said, like, she has called things out in the past. So I'm not saying this is the first time, but, you know, it's always like a little bit unusual and noteworthy when she does say something like that. So,
well, her backbone contracts, right? Like, there's certain episodes where she really stands up for herself and everybody else or other characters. Well, and then there's like multiple episodes where she's sobbing in the corner.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, I want her to be this sort of eye for the audience, you know, this perspective. But then, yeah, then she goes off into the corner, or she becomes a Stepford double wife.
Yeah, I mean, you can be a good girl and still be savvy.
But yeah, exactly. And so it's like, it's weird, because I don't know what to do with her. And my default is like, basically like, well, it just kind of pisses me off that she's a boohoo, essentially. That's kind of, to me, like what she does. But she has these moments where suddenly lightning strikes. Mm-hmm. And she's making fun of Alexis's like really tacky, you know, elephant tusk desk. You know.
And it gets to Alexis, because she closes that door and then she turns into a puddle, a purple and pink puddle.
I love that, because Alexis really is wearing like the most unnoteworthy, if not tacky, outfit in the whole, you know, episode. So that works for me.
The other puddle that we have in this episode is Jeff Colby. He is such a fucking beta male. I can't stand stand it. We have Kirby go to Colby Co to meet up with them. Of course, she runs into that sleazy slime ball, Adam. And Jeff walks in on them and, like, he sees this guy touching this woman who is now his wife, his upstairs bride. And he doesn't do anything about it. He's just like, I think you guys were, you know, being inappropriate.
I think
a little bitch.
God damn it. I'm so tired of going to La Mirage, you know.
For lunch.
Yeah, for lunch.
You and Kirby both.
I don't like going to those crowded downtown places every day.
La Mirage is convenient?
Not exactly. It's a 20-minute drive, but...
But I thought it might be convenient to a house that we could look at today, maybe buy, so that we could be alone finally.
It's not sexy. It's really worn out its welcome.
It really has. And then they waste...
You know, like, I get it. The St. Denis Club was looking like the Price is Right set, so we had to move on. I understand those
things. I kind of miss the St. Denis Club.
Well, you know, at this point, it would be just like a fun throwback, but it doesn't really matter.
Well, they actually have the writers write lines for Kirby and Jeff to explain why they're having lunch at La Mirage. Add up the time here. This is taking 3 hours out of the day to go have lunch at La Mirage.
There is most definitely a sort of soap operatic universe problem, and La Mirage is the black hole. Mm-hmm. It's this place where people just get sucked into. It takes all of the energy, and when people go there, they disappear and nothing happens after that.
Yeah,
you know?
And Kirby's feeling it because her marriage is not progressing. Her husband has no interest in finding a place to live. They're just going to keep living at the Carrington Mansion and keep having them weird ass salads at La Mirage for lunch.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's, you know, we used to complain about the food at the St. Denis Club, but God, could you imagine eating lunch at La Mirage? It could only be worse.
Those salads have got to take at least 45 minutes for them to cut them.
Everything is
like
canned crab and flat seltzer water. And
I'd cry too. Let's talk about the relationship between Steven and Adam. They cannot find equal footing.
No, and they're not going to. And, you know, that's fine with me. It's interesting. I like both characters for very different reasons. And I think for that reason, I don't need them to get along. I don't know. And I think there's always this like assumption that, oh, like, you know, familial relations are supposed to get along. No, maybe they're not.
Well,
I don't think it's a shocker that, you know, two brothers in a family don't get along. So whatever.
I really like that Steven calls Adam out when they're on the way to their little business trip in Wyoming. Like, let me do all the talking because I've actually been on oil rigs. I've actually gotten my nails dirty.
Wyoming or Montana?
Oh, I don't know. One of those squarey
states.
Oh,
it don't be like that.
I get the squarey states confused.
You think I can't deal with the field manager when we survey this operation?
Look, if you'll just listen for a minute.
No, big brother, you listen to me. Have you ever worked on a rig? Ever been part of a crew when a well came in? Ever worked in a refinery? In fact, have you ever in your entire career with Colby Co. gotten oil sludge under your fingernails?
No, I haven't.
While all your poring over law books, advising and consulting over drinks won't do a damn thing for us once we're down on the ground checking out Johnson's operation. Just keep your mouth shut, Adam. Let me do the talking.
One thing I think about when watching the third season is how far away we are from the first season. You know, there were literally oil derricks on the show. Like, there was literally equipment. People were, like, touching the black stuff. Now, we don't see any of that.
Okay,
it's just talk about it in boardrooms.
There's a couple
offices.
Of things there. Oil was clearly, like, a huge foundation to both this show and obviously Dallas, because that was a big problem with inflation, and that's the whole reason that, like, somebody like Blake Carrington could build his whole empire. If you could, like, play the cards, you know, oil was this thing that could really lead to riches or, you know, destitution. But another part of that was, like, the whole idea of, like, Reagan dismantling the mental health infrastructure that we had. And I don't know that that's necessarily a good or a bad thing, but it clearly led to certain things. But right now,
Claudia,
like, we're seeing Claudia
institution.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is probably at the very beginning of, like, that idea. But, like, I just think it's interesting that, like, you know, that was a big part of the Reagan administration was taking apart all of the, institutionalized mental health facilities. Anyway, so now we have like Claudia, who's been languishing at one of these.
I'm pretty sure that Claudia is receiving care of the Carrington.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, let's not, be too fancified. Like,
I think when they moved her from the West Wing into the asylum.
She's not getting, like...
Yeah, she ain't on Medicaid. Well, maybe I need to be institutionalized because this episode was just so crazy to me. I mean, I'm very glad to see Claudia back, but man, Alexis is acting a fool, throwing all of them panties around the room. And again, the one saving grace in this whole episode is Crystal. I think she's the most level-headed bitch on this show.
Oh yeah, she's clearly the most level-headed, but that's kind of boring. And that's why we keep going back to Alexis. And, you know, like, look, Alexis, right now, she's doing more bonkers things. She's ridiculous. I think the last episode or two or three episodes, she was freeze frame throwing a martini at an elevator door in her penthouse. You know, I mean, like, look, you're never going to get some kind of balanced, level-headed woman out of Alexis. But at the same time, like, she's always going to deliver the most personality and power and excitement and charisma. I think that's a problem is Crystal is not ultimately a charismatic character.
I mean, I don't know. I was feeling a lot of charisma coming out of that fur that she was trotting around this whole episode.
Charisma or Crystal?
And now it's time to talk about our looks of the week. Well, I think you were making some bitchy comment about it earlier, but I'm giving it to Alexis for being able to wear purple and pink at the same fucking time. Yes, she did look a little bit like a flamingo, but my God, that shade of pink, how do you pull that off? The hat and the blouse matched. There was a pussy bow involved. I've been big into pussy bows lately because ASOS has been selling pussy bows for men, and I'm contemplating buying one. $36 for a blouse and a pussy bow that matches.
I am scandalized.
I know it's obvious, but I just really liked her with that pink blouse and pink hat and pink pants or purple pants.
It's a little bit like, it's the same problem I had. She did this before. It's a very Purello. It's just like put on a big blousy clown collar, you know, commedia dell'arte thing, which I know that's not really what this is supposed to be, but
send in Alexis. I'm here for it.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, not down for that, but I can appreciate that you liked it anyway.
So what was your look of the week?
So there's this moment towards the end of the episode where Crystal and Blake have a thing at the, you know, fireplace. She's wearing like this, I don't know that I would say that this is always interesting, but here it's really fascinating to me because it's a light gold colored champagne, even if you'd like
bronze
sort of, maybe. No, not, I wouldn't go that far. But it doesn't matter. It's
well, excuse the fuck out of me.
Yeah, it's a shiny material, whatever it is. And it's sort of a shoulder to floor gown. But, you know, from the neck down to the shoulders, it's totally bare. And we don't always get Linda Evans in this kind of, you know, like usually the plunging neckline is not on her. But what I really love about this is like you take it all with the tan, she's clearly been tanning or getting some tanning spray, and then like the hair, oh my God,
her hair has never looked better in that outfit.
Her hair has never looked bigger.
Oh, it's, that's what I meant to say.
It's
sorry.
The same.
Her hair has never looked bigger.
It's the same wig, but that thing was put in the dryer a little bit too long on low cycle, and She is like a head to toe sparkling glass of champagne. And like, I don't know what the fur cuffs thing, it's like, it's a lot.
I almost picked this as my look of the week, but functionally, I just kept thinking, what are they eating? She's going to get the spaghetti sauce in the fur sleeves. How do you eat with that?
You
roll those up?
You don't. If you ate anything, you wouldn't be able to fit into this dress. So the thing is, it's so modern, honestly, like for the time period, like let's first adjust for 1983. All that said, you look at what Joan's wearing, and it's very late 70s, early 80s. But what Crystal's wearing here, and granted, they're dressed for slightly different occasions, but even adjusting for that, it's very modern, and it kind of strikes you as, like, you know, like, what would a Real Housewife of Orange County or Atlanta or whatever, like, you know, like, there's definitely something like a new money woman who's of a certain age would wear today. And I don't think that this is that far from what that is. And I don't think what Joan Collins is wearing is that. What she's wearing is very much runway 1981.
Look, I just hope Mrs. Gunnarsson puts extra napkins out on the table. Well, that's it for this week's episode of Dynasty As They Want to Be. Kyler, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody can follow along on our journey on social media at Nasty Podcast. That's NASTY Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, all the places. And if you want to be like Dave and be able to write us a letter and give us the what for, join our Patreon, patreon.com/nastypodcast. We have 3 tiers. We have the Crystal tier, we have the Alexis tier, and if you're a real Mr. Moneybags, you can join at the Blake level. Well, be sure to join us next time when we discuss the episode The Threat. Do you think Congressman Neil McBlah has anything to do with The Threat?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.